Former House Speaker Paul Ryan is talking more about his time working with President Trump. White House advisor Kellyanne Conway is defying a subpoena to testify in front of Congress. And we're seeing more reaction from lawmakers to President Trump's tweets aimed at four first-term congresswomen. Yesterday, the House passed a non-binding resolution to condemn the president's statements. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the House vote to condemn the president's tweets? Should they be doing more, less? Do you want to hear more Republicans speaking out against the president's statements? Do you think this is a distraction from other big issues Congress is working on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Good to be back with you.
Well, all the Democrats in the House, I believe, along with a few Republicans, voted in support of this resolution condemning the president's tweets. Can you give us more of a sense of what that resolution says and does?
Well, it doesn't do much. It's mostly symbolic. It simply condemns the president for what Democrats and a handful of Republicans said were racist tweets. These were tweets, if you remember, that the president said about the four freshmen lawmakers of color, Democrats, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, as well as Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. And the president said that, tweeted that they should go back to their own countries and try to resolve problems there. Of course, all four of those women are American, U.S. citizens, as is required to serve in Congress, and three of them were born in the United States. Ilhan Omar is a refugee from Somalia and went through the proper channels to become a U.S. citizen. So Nancy Pelosi was under an incredible amount of pressure to do something, and the solution that they found was to vote on, very quickly it happened, vote on a resolution condemning President Trump's words.
There was a lot of back and forth on the House floor leading up to the vote. Here's a bit of what Speaker Nancy Pelosi had to say.
Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets. To do anything less would be a shocking rejection of our values and a shameful abdication of our oath of office to protect the American people.
Right after that remark, there was some procedural chaos in the House based on what you could say on the floor of the House about the president. This gets a little detailed here, but can you tell us what happened there, Scott?
Yeah, just generally, Republicans objected to Nancy Pelosi calling the president's tweets racist in her remarks on the floor. There are House rules that bar lawmakers from criticizing other lawmakers and criticizing the president of the United States or attacking them in a personal way. The parliamentarian ruled that it did in fact violate the House rules, and because Democrats control the majority and have more members in the House than Republicans, they voted to overrule the parliamentarian's decision, and so her words were allowed to remain. And so just a little bit of back and forth between the two parties, but in the end, obviously just a very, very tough week for the House of Representatives.
The politics of this, Scott, some people, I think including the president himself, had said this is ultimately good for President Trump. It focuses attention on what he says are more extreme members of the Democratic Party. Some people saying this is bad for President Trump because you don't see this kind of thing happen very often. What's some of what you've been hearing about the political fallout of this back and forth?
Yeah, it's unclear to me whether this is good or bad for the president. I guess you could argue that it does fire up his base, but obviously, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who have come forward publicly, including Mike Turner of Ohio, Fred Upton, the former energy chairman from Michigan, who have said that, you know, these were flat-out racist comments that the president has made. This is a long-standing racist trope that we've seen throughout U.S. history, and it has no place in American political discourse, let alone from the president of the United States.
Talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at some of the latest news in the nation's capital. Let's go to your calls now on this congressional resolution condemning the president's tweets at 800-642-1234. Scott joins us in Portage. Scott, hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What do you think, Scott?
It seems like Omar and the girls, they're always anti-Jewish and anti-America. And nobody really, it never gets a lot of attention, but the minute that the president slips up, all of a sudden it's impeachment. It just seems it's a little heavy-sided to me.
Scott, thanks for the call. Of course, some of Ilhan Omar's comments, Scott Wong, did get a lot of attention, including from fellow Democrats in Congress. What have we seen there?
Well, that's right. Earlier this year, Ilhan Omar's very critical comments about the state of Israel was condemned by almost all Democrats across the board, and really sowed a lot of divisions in the party that are still apparent even today. So what I think President Trump's tweets did was, for a brief moment, unify these sort of warring factions, the progressives and the moderates that we've seen over the last few months and several weeks, and unify them for a brief moment. I do think simmering under it all is still these tensions between the two wings of the Democratic Party, and we're going to see numerous more fights play out in the coming days. Tomorrow, they're going to be taking up a minimum wage bill, which is, again, driving a wedge between the progressives and the moderates in the party.
Scott, thanks for calling in. We'll go now to Tom in Madison. Tom, hi.
Yes, I was just reading an article this morning where saying that someone should go back to their place of origin is by definition a racist statement, and it was in a anti-discrimination federal law. I think the biggest embarrassment to Wisconsin was Sean Duffy, who was described as having a meltdown on the floor of Congress. Saying that the women were obvious, it was obvious who they were. They did not love America. And also they wanted to replace capitalism with socialism. And these are just all downright lies.
Tom, thanks for the call. Yeah, Sean Duffy of Wisconsin, his speech got a lot of attention on this. Was there a lot of impassioned talk from both sides leading up and, I guess, following this vote, Scott?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know, we're talking about, and I think it served the president's purpose. I mean, the president, has made, Democrats have been fighting with themselves up until this point about a range of issues. And the president saw an opening and took it. And, it seems like it has reinvigorated Republicans. They see Democrats as overstepping in this regard. Democrats believe that they are in the right here. So it's really unprecedented, some of the words that are being said in press conferences and on the House floor, and of course by the President of the United States.
On a related note, you were talking about that internal Democratic feud. Another one you've been following, House Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries and the Chief of Staff for Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. What happened there?
Well, this again all stems back to sort of the infighting that we've seen between progressives and moderates in the Democratic Party, going back a couple weeks to the border aid bill, where progressives wanted a much more liberal bill. Moderates sided with the United States Senate and were able to push through a more moderate bill. That triggered a round of recriminations from progressives. A number of them had called specifically Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's chief of staff had referred to other moderate Democrats as segregationists. And in fact, one moderate Democrat woman, Charisse Davids, as a racist, which we've never seen before, a chief of staff level those types of accusations against lawmakers of their own party. And that just has created so much bad blood that issue continues to boil over. And so the House Democrats' official Twitter, and all these problems sort of relate back to Twitter, but the House Democrats' official Twitter tweeted back AOC's chief of staff that he was out of place and that he should not be talking about other members in that fashion. And so you have sort of a war of words happening between between the leadership and between AOC, and it's a very hard story to follow, but it has gone off in a number of different directions. And you know, the bottom line is that Democrats are all pointing fingers at each other and saying awful things about each other, and have really been divided over these last few weeks, save for this moment where President Trump interjected himself into the conversation and briefly has unified Democrats.
Let's bring on one more caller. Carol is on the line in Milwaukee. Carol, hi.
Hi. Can I say my opinion?
Yes, please do.
I think the Democrats are reacting just the way Trump wants them to, by worrying and obsessing about all of this, and the news media goes along with it. A lot of obsession, and the way it should have been answered was, yes, these women would be glad to go back to their countries and help them, but Trump should go back to his country and of origin and follow their good example about health care and about global warming, because those countries from Europe could give him a good lesson.
Carol, thanks for the call. The idea that this is a distraction, Scott, that Democrats and the media are chasing too much. What do you think?
Well, it has been a distraction. I mean, when we're talking about racism and going back to your own country, things like that, we are not talking about important issues like health care and the minimum wage vote coming up and reducing drug prices. It has become a distraction. It's also driven a wedge between, I think, Trump and Democrats even further as they try to negotiate some bipartisan issues. And so right now there's talks about a 2-year budget deal. There's talks about lowering prescription drug prices. But it's made those negotiations obviously much tougher.
We're talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at some of the top political news stories of the week. Coming up, Paul Ryan speaks out on his time as House Speaker while President Trump was President Trump. Also, the latest efforts to start an impeachment hearing. Call 800-642-1234 if you have thoughts on either of those. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the top news of the week in Washington. Scott, you were on the Paul Ryan beat for quite a while he was House Speaker. He was interviewed as part of a new book about the changes we've seen in the Republican Party by, I think, Tim Alberta. His comments about President Trump, a bit different than what we've heard before. What jumped out to you?
I mean, these were the most forceful comments we've heard Paul Ryan give about President Trump in years, probably since before President Trump became president. And so he feels, former speaker feels liberated and to speak his mind finally after all this time. And I think, he said things like, the president should not call a woman a horse face. He should not cheat on his wife. It was sort of just the speaker unloading on the president, unlike we've seen before. And it seems like, the speaker made a decision at the time the president got elected that he would hold off on his criticisms and work with him. And that was because he saw himself as one of the adults in the room that could try to, shape the president in the best way he could. But now that he's out of that office, he is really speaking his mind.
Have we heard any response from the president yet to what's been revealed from this book that Paul Ryan said?
Well, yeah, the president never lets anyone throw a punch at him without hitting back. And the president was right back on Twitter, tweeting at the speaker, calling him a weak and ineffectual leader and, the worst speaker in history. So that was to be expected. I think Speaker Ryan expected the president was going to hit back. But there had been sort of this truce over those 2 years when they were serving together. They were able to push through tax reform. And I think Speaker Ryan saw the president as the vehicle that he could move tax reform through, you know, through the Congress and to the president's desk, but also, you know, realized that he saw himself as sort of one of the last lines of defense, you know, against a very unpredictable president, him and Chief of Staff John Kelly and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Now, none of those people are in the administration or in the Congress, and so Trump has replaced a lot of those people with acting officials, which is causing some real concern on the part of people like Speaker Ryan.
It seems like an ongoing trend where members of Congress or their staffers in the Republican Party off the record raise concerns about President Trump or are said to have said things about President Trump on the record, not so much until they leave office, as we've seen from Paul Ryan. Is that a trend you've seen?
That's exactly right, because people have seen what happens to the Republican lawmakers who speak out against the president. They end up having a very short political career, like Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, like Mark Sanford of South Carolina. And the latest example, of course, is Justin Amash, the former Republican turned independent from Michigan, who some people think may jump into a presidential race against President Trump, but he has yet to make a decision.
Talking about some of the top news in Washington this week with Scott Wong from The Hill. Scott, we're watching for an impeachment proceeding vote in the U.S. House. One representative saying he's bringing it up, forcing a vote. We're expecting that. It looks like the latest news is early this evening. What's going on here?
Yeah, that vote is supposed to happen any minute now. It is Congressman Al Green, a very progressive congressman from Texas. He has forced a vote on articles of impeachment against President Trump for later today. This is primarily rooted in the president's tweets about the four minority congresswomen that many deem racist. And Al Green has made his articles of impeachment much more about the president who accusing him of inflaming racial tensions, rather than some of the other articles that we've seen from other lawmakers that have to do more with Russia and obstruction of justice. And so leadership, Nancy Pelosi is not a fan of this. This is not the strategy she wants to go down. And so what they probably will do is just vote to table the articles of impeachment, and that would dispense of the issue, but it would get a lot of people on the record.
Let's bring on a caller on this. Justin is with us in Appleton. Justin, hi.
Hey there. How's it going today?
Good. What do you think?
I think that all this impeachment talk is important because we can look back at President Nixon, and he was impeached, and they talked about impeachment with him. And there was a reason for impeachment. So I think if we would like to see Donald Trump impeached today, we would have to have him actually commit something to be impeachable about. And he hasn't done that as far as we're concerned. So I think we're going to need to wait for him to make some mistakes or something.
Justin, thanks for the call. And there's argument, Scott, over what exactly constitute grounds for impeachment.
Well, that's right. And a lot of lawmakers, a lot of Democrats want to wait till next week when Robert Mueller, the special counsel, will be testifying before Congress for the first time since he released his Mueller report on Russian interference and conspiracy and potential obstruction of justice by the president. And so I think, you know, some people say there could be some new revelations. Others are saying, well, he's simply going to regurgitate what he wrote in his report. But a lot of people want to wait and see what Mueller has to say before jumping to that step of impeachment.
Thanks for that call, Justin. Before we wrap up, Scott, Kellyanne Conway, White House advisor, refused to comply with congressional subpoena to testify before the House Oversight Committee. Why was she being subpoenaed?
Democrats had accused her of violating the Hatch Act, which prohibits government officials from engaging in campaign work. And so they said in numerous interviews that she had talked about the 2020 campaign and talked about other elections. So this is a trend of Trump administration officials and White House officials saying that just not honoring the subpoenas from Democrats. We've seen it with most of the cabinet officials, including AG Bill Barr and Wilbur Ross in a separate case involving the 2020 census. Later today, as part of this vote series, the House Democrats will also vote to hold those two cabinet members in contempt of Congress for failing to agree to subpoenas. And so this is an ongoing fight between the executive branch and the legislative branch.
And the White House claiming executive privilege here, but Congress saying, hold on, this isn't about the advice Kellyanne Conway may have given to the president. This is about the violations of the Hatch Act. Probably going to end up in the courts?
Yeah, most of these cases are ending up in the courts. And, you know, we've seen rulings on both sides, some in favor of the House Democrats, others in favor of President Trump and the White House. And so a lot of these things are still being worked out through the courts. You know, this fight is long from over.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
That's Scott Wong, senior staff writer for The Hill. He was with us for a weekly look at some of the week's big stories in national politics. Another big national political story out this week, the latest numbers on the federal budget deficit. We'll be talking about that tomorrow on Central Time. Tune into that at 4:30. Also, we were talking about Robert Mueller testifying before Congress. He was scheduled to do that this week. Now it's looking like it's next week. We will be planning to bring you NPR live coverage of Robert Mueller testifying before Congress. Watch for listings and announcements as we get the details on that. And of course, you can always react to what you hear on these conversations. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.